Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to Millennial Love, a podcast from The Independent on everything to do with love, sexuality, identity and more. This week, I am thrilled to be joined by Naomi Smart. Naomi is a hugely popular lifestyle YouTuber and the founder of Smart Skin, a vegan and cruelty-free beauty brand. I've been following her work for some time now, so it was a pleasure to speak to her a little bit more about what it is that she does, how self-care can boost our confidence, and how much of your relationship you should share on social media. But the bulk of this episode is about a very big breakup Naomi went through last summer, and she speaks incredibly openly about how it affected her in a way that I hope will resonate with many of you. It certainly resonated with me. I'll leave it there for now. Enjoy the show!
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good, I'm fine. Getting on with things. Looking forward to the world opening up again. We're recording this in March, but it will be out in May. Things will be open by then, won't they?
I know, I feel like we are so close, but in a weird way, I feel like the past couple of weeks have been the hardest, almost like counting down until life potentially goes back to normal. It's just, I don't know, it's really dragging.
I know, it's really gone on this time, and I think particularly because we had to do it through winter, and it was just, it was so much worse. Like in the summer it was so much nicer because you could just chill in people's gardens and in the park and stuff, and it's like the winter has just been so bleak.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every day that the sun comes out, I'm just like worshipping it. I'm outside, I'm so much happier.
Yeah,
the weather definitely has been a massive impact. I think you're right, it's made it a lot harder when we've had those miserable, grey, rainy days where you don't even want to go for a walk.
So talk to me a bit about how you found the last year, because I know you've gone through quite a few like major changes in terms of your personal relationships and your living situation. And, you know, all of that on top of a pandemic, it's a lot.
It's been a bit crazy, yes. I feel like every part of my life has changed in the past 12 months. And that's aside from the pandemic. Like the pandemic is just on top of all of that. And in a weird old way, I'm kind of glad it's all happened at once, because it's really forced me to take a good look at myself, at my life. What is it that I want? It's almost like a new blank canvas, and I can start again in a weird way. So yeah, I mean, it has been a mad old few months, but I'm really seeing the positives in all of it now.
Mm. We've spoken a bit on the show before about Saturn returns. Is that something that you've thought about in terms of your big seismic life changes? Because you're at that age, right?
Yes, yeah. I'm 28, turning 29. Well, I'll be 29 when this comes out, actually. So I feel like I am at the beginning of it, which is kind of terrifying, because I feel like surely the past 12 months is enough. Please don't let this just be the beginning. But I've spoken to a few friends that have gone through it, and I think sometimes the very beginning stages is like where your feathers are ruffled, like it feels incredibly uncomfortable, lots of changes, and then the next few months or even couple of years will be about me just figuring it all out, hopefully getting my life together.
It's so funny because I'm 26 and I keep thinking like, oh my God, I'm having the Saturn return now as well. And it's just, I feel like because I know that this thing exists, I'm like, oh yeah, this explains why. And I'm kind of like using that to validate everything that's happened in my life. And it's like, no, like, I think I'm too young. I think that could be at any point. And like, I feel like every year when stuff happens to you, I'm like, oh, it's the Saturn return. It's the planets. It's the planets.
I mean, you know, timing isn't set. You may have a premature Saturn return, who knows? But the reason I was laughing just then is because I thought the exact same. And I know that you've had Kagi on your podcast.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, she's a great friend. And I remember speaking to her just over a year ago. And we were talking about Saturn returns. And I was like, do you know what? I'm so lucky that I just haven't had my Saturn returns. Like, and I'm 28 and my life is sorted. I'm engaged. I'm planning my wedding. Like, life is easy. And then I remember calling her literally like a few weeks later, just being like, oh my God, I was so wrong. I was so wrong.
Oh man, you jinxed it. You jinxed it.
Not, I'm saying that's going to happen to you at all. But, you know, I know how you're feeling right now. That kind of apprehension of what may come must feel really bizarre.
I mean, so much has already happened. I don't know how much more could happen. It's been a crazy year for me as well. Anyway, I want to start off by talking a bit about our relationships with ourselves, because I think that's something that you talk a lot about on your social media profiles, and you obviously run this vegan skincare brand called Smart Skin. So I want to talk to you a bit about self-care, because I know that a lot of people think that that kind of involves giving yourself like a nighttime facial and having a bath and whatever, but it's obviously there's a lot more to it than that. And I want to know what you think the phrase self-care even means now, and how important it is to kind of creating a good relationship with ourselves. And because I guess it's been overused so much now, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do feel like that term self-care is now one that a lot of people probably roll their eyes at, or just feel like, oh God, like it just means nothing now. Like, what even does it mean? I think it really is about going inwards and going on a journey of self-discovery. And that's what I've been doing now for the past few months, because I was like forced into this situation where my life was turned upside down. And I think I realized pretty quickly and early on that I needed to do something about it. And I desperately didn't want it to define me. And I wanted to just learn more about myself. And it just seemed like the perfect opportunity. And that in itself is self-care. But I think you need to really want to work on it. And you have to really want to look after yourself to feel the benefits. It's a bit like if you scream at someone that something's wrong with them and they need to go into therapy, and you force them into a room and you sit them down in front of a therapist and say, right, sort out your problems. They're not going to achieve anything in that room because they don't want to be there. So you could have someone else that is feeling, you know, in a similar way, but actually wants to work on themselves and wants to fix themselves and goes to meet the same therapist in the same room and can have a completely different experience because they genuinely want to fix that, whatever it is. And I feel like self-care is similar, less extreme, obviously. It's not like anything's wrong with you to want to fix something or, you know, to want to look after yourself. It's just a case of that outlook and that mindset of I really want to better myself for me, but also the people around me. And I do feel like there's this huge misconception actually about self-care and self-love is selfish. And I think it's, from my experience, it's a lot of the like an older generation that look at what I'm doing and probably think, wow, you are so selfish spending all this time like looking after yourself. Like, but actually I see selfishness is it can be selfless in the way that it has this amazing ripple effect on that if you are bettering yourself as a person, you're going to be a far better person to be around, and hopefully it can encourage and inspire others to then look after themselves too. And I think even that word selfish, like it's got such a negative connotation attached to it. Like, actually, what's wrong with us being a little bit selfish, especially for women? It's like we've been conditioned almost to be like, if you're feminine, you are completely selfless and you don't think about yourself and you just always do things for other people. It's like, well, actually, let's regain a bit more of that control of our lives and let's be a little bit more selfish. Like, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, it's so you're just taught to be a nurturer and kind of raised to be incredibly selfless, like you said, and just always put other people before yourself. And obviously that's important to a degree. But at the same time, if you are sacrificing yourself to that extent, to the point where you're no longer comfortable in your own company, I guess, sometimes, because it's like, you know, I think people who don't really look after themselves in that sense, they don't know what to do when they're alone because it's like, well, you know, I can't relax now, you know, and I've had this so much. I don't, I think this is particularly relevant in the pandemic, spending so much time alone, and now I'm living alone and, you know, constantly working, and when you finally have nothing to do anymore, it's like, oh crap, what am I supposed to do now? Like, I'll have a bath, I'll give myself the facial, but it doesn't feel that great. Like, it's so much more than that. You said it's like a mindset change.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, it's an amazing quality to be caring for others and nurturing, but I do feel like you can't give that much if you're not giving anything to yourself. So it's almost like really working on yourself and loving yourself to actually give out that true meaningful love and care and that nurture. So it is all about just looking inwards. And in terms of like, well, what do you do for self-care? It really is a personal thing. I think the classic thing is like, oh, light a couple of candles and have a bath, and that's self-care. But again, like, you can do a million and one things and spend hundreds of pounds on like self-care rituals or whatever it is. But if your mindset isn't there, if your mind isn't in the right place, it's going to be a complete waste of time and a complete waste of money. So it really can be the simplest of things that you enjoy, that make you feel good, that really encourage you to realize that you are worth a lot. It's really about this journey of self-discovery. That's what I found. And, you know, I started off when I felt like my whole life had come crashing down in front of me last summer. I thought I knew all the things to do by doing those like stereotypical, like, I'm gonna have a bath and I'm gonna, you know, take it slow. But then I think I realized through experience that there were certain things that really worked for me, and then certain things that just didn't. Like, you know, it was nice, but like, to sit in the bath or whatever, but it's not really changing my life right now. So it's just all about little things and changing your mindset. And that's where I feel like my skincare comes into this, because I realize that you can really find peace in the smallest part of your day. And if you can discover that and create that sense of calm with mundane activities, it can be completely life-changing, and you actually don't need to do much or spend much time on doing it, because it's already kind of there and part of your life. It is just about changing the way that you see it and perceive it and feel in that moment. So skincare for me is one of those times. It's like the two bookends of your day, like morning and night, and spending 5 to 10 minutes to truly focus on you. And it's a time to just be on your own and have that me time. And it's as simple as applying a facial oil and just giving yourself a little bit of a facial massage or a face mask, or just actually noticing how these products that you're using make you feel, and the fragrance, and just taking it all in. It really is about becoming more mindful. And you know, most of us do have a little skincare routine in the morning and evening, but I found that before, for me, it was so rushed. It was like a chore. It was something I had to do, like scrub off your makeup. Oh God, can't wait to get back into bed, whatever. And then in the morning, it's like, oh God, can I really be bothered? I'm running out of time. I'm meant to be, you know, on the tube or whatever. I need to run, like, can't be bothered with all of this. But actually using your skincare as an opportunity to completely calm down, and it's in a beautiful way to start the day, because it is like a meditation. And that's when you can start doing things like affirmations, like telling yourself, you know, almost like telling yourself how you want your day to play out ahead of you.
It's really interesting, because I think it's, like you said, it's very much about that kind of ritual and routine that is just like incredibly calming. But also I think what you said about mindfulness is really interesting, because when you're doing something like skincare, you obviously are like looking at your skin and you're kind of watching everything and you're seeing where the creams are going. And it sounds really basic and obvious, but it's so difficult to do things mindfully, particularly I think in lockdown, you know, when you're constantly in your house, like there's always a podcast playing or a song playing, or there's something going on in the background. Like, I find it so hard to just be in the moment. I'm always like listening to something in the background. Even when I have a bath, like, I just can't sit there in silence, not having anything. And it's so So I think something like skincare, anything, whatever it is that you can just do and be completely present in the moment, it's so calming. Like the other day, I just switched my phone off from like 8 until 12 because I had a day off. And normally I would never do that. I'd still be like looking at my emails and like I'd be listening to the radio while I do my brush my teeth, whatever. And it just adds to the noise in your head, you know?
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. I think lockdown has done that to all of us. Just like we're almost so bored stuck at home that we can't be bothered to stick to doing one thing like reading a book or watching a movie. Like it's almost like we're just searching for something to stimulate us within the home. So, but we're so limited to those resources. So it's just like, well, I'm going to check my emails and then I'm going to go on social media and then I'm going to go back to emails. And then, oh, was I listening to a playlist or was I listening to a podcast? And it's like this cycle and it's stressful. And I definitely feel like I am in that place as well. So that's why I feel like just using something like your skincare routine, it's so simple. It's so accessible. Just use those few minutes to actually become self-aware. And like you say, you are looking at your skin in the mirror. It's about body awareness as well. And actually that physical touch can just feel so soothing. Mm-hmm. And it is an act of self-love. And that's why I decided to create my skincare products. But obviously I've been working on my skincare products for a good couple of years now. They launched in September last year, but I wanted to create a skincare range because I was so passionate about this idea of self-love and encouraging confidence within women. And I really do feel like skincare can be one of those very small aspects to your life where you can really achieve that. But it really came into its own after August of last year when my, like I say, the carpet was just pulled from underneath me. And then a month later, I launched my products and it just, in a way, like was unbelievable timing in terms of like, how on earth am I going to do this? But also kind of the best time because I'd never resonated more with actually the whole ethos of the brand. Like I knew what self-love and self-care meant, but in a way I'd never had to like really practice it to pull myself back together and heal. And I do feel like a lot of people have said to me, whether you know this is my audience online or my friends and family, they've said you've dealt with this so well. And you know, considering it was only in August and we were engaged, the wedding was planned, booked, everything, considering all of that and to be now only a few months later and feel like wow, I'm like a different person and I just count my lucky stars that this has happened to me, it is quite soon. And I think it is because I had this practice in place before so that I was already set up for this and I'd laid the foundations that were already there so that if trauma hit or you know I was knocked down by whether it's a relationship or career or something, I was already in a really fortunate position to know how to look after myself and know what I needed to do. I had those tools already. And I'm not saying, it sounds like I'm saying, and the skincare saved me. I mean they're great, but they don't have magical powers. But there are so many parts of my life, like yoga, meditation, and I really delved in deep to this and I had to lean into that pain. I had to take a good old look at myself, went inwards, went on this journey of self-discovery, and that focus allowed me to actually just realize that I feel like this happened for a reason and I'm actually incredibly grateful for it.
It's really interesting. I think it's so important what you say about like prevention rather than just going straight into the cure, because it's like with anything, like you said, any kind of trauma, any life issue, if you already have that really good solid foundation of like a healthy lifestyle, you have that kind of self-belief and self-confidence, and you know the things that kind of keep you ticking, you have a good routine, then like you say, when something really horrific happens to you can deal with it a lot better. So let's talk about heartbreak, because there are other things that I want to touch on, but we'll get to that a bit later, I think, because it seems like you know, we talk about this on the podcast a lot for obvious reasons, because most people will experience heartbreak. But I think it's something that is worth talking about over and over again, because obviously everyone has their own experience to share and their own unique perspective that will resonate with someone. So correct me if I'm wrong here, but my understanding is that your followers found out that you'd gone through this breakup without you even telling them, because obviously you have a lot of followers online and you shared parts of your relationship, and then suddenly you weren't sharing it anymore. So I wonder what that felt like, and if you felt pressured to speak publicly about something that was obviously so deeply personal and incredibly painful.
Yeah, absolutely. I basically went offline for a while on social media because I physically couldn't do it. I mean, I think I barely even looked at my phone. I was just like in, as you can imagine, just such a state. So I wasn't posting. So in a really bizarre, it's really weird to say, but people kind of thought, okay, something must be going on, because, you know, it'd been a couple of weeks of just like radio silence. And I think I posted a very cryptic message, because I was like, I need to address this. I need to let people know that I'm alive and like everything's okay, but that I'm going to take some time off. So I basically just said, you know, I honestly can't remember. It's so weird, like looking back, it's just like that time in my life. I think I just said something like, I'm sorry that I've been offline, but I'm going to be offline for a little while. Something's going on. It wasn't exactly like that, but I said something's going on, but I wasn't ready to talk about it, which sounds, looking back now, it sounds like it was hugely attention seeking to be like, something's wrong, but I'm not telling you what. But I just wasn't ready to like be like, oh my gosh, like this has happened. I was in denial, and I couldn't even face it myself at that stage. So the thought of having to open up to like millions of people was terrifying. So people off the back of that kind of realized it must be something to do with my relationship. And I, over the years, I became incredibly comfortable with posting him, because, you know, he was a massive part of my life. So, and my social media is quite personal, in that it's very much about like my lifestyle, my ethos, and, you know, my relationship was a big part of that. And I was incredibly happy, and I didn't feel like I needed to hide anything or, you know, keep it a secret at all. I was so happy. I think I almost did want to like show it off, because I was so proud. I was just like, oh, I can't describe it in any other way other than I was really, really happy and proud.
No, but I think that makes sense for most people on a smaller degree as well. Like, I know this is very much your livelihood, but everyone shares their relationship on social media. You know, like you said, it's something that people feel proud of, and it's not about showing off, but it's about being like, I'm so proud that I have this person in my life. It's a natural compulsion in this day and age to want to share the things that are making you happy. You know, everyone, I think, can identify with that.
Yeah, I actually remember when I was single before and saying and thinking to myself, I don't want to put a relationship online. You know, that side of my life is so private, I'm going to keep it that way. And for the first couple of years, I think I did, or at least the first year. And then just gradually, I know, you just become a bit more relaxed, and because I, you know, I'd film a lot, he would be in the background, so my audience naturally just got to know him. And you know, it was great, nothing wrong with that at all. But it does mean that when you open up a part of your life online, if it does all come crashing down and it ends, you cannot just walk away from it and pretend like it never happened and just be like, oh, not gonna talk about that. So eventually I did speak very openly about the breakup on my Instagram, on stories. I would share the bad days. I would just be like, look, people don't talk about this enough. Heartbreak is the worst feeling in the world. I literally feel physical pain in my body. And I thought, why do people not talk about this? So I felt at the time that I just needed to hopefully help other people out there that may be going through it. And also it was providing me with a huge amount of comfort talking about it and hearing other people's stories, and that actually thousands and thousands of other people are going through it, millions in the world, you know, at one time. I wasn't the only one. I wasn't suffering on my own. I had loads, like this whole online community that I almost like started this conversation with, that we were just sharing stories, and it just brought a huge amount of comfort. And then that led on to me creating a video on my YouTube channel that was just completely like raw and, you know, didn't hold back. I kept like the circumstances private, but spoke about how I felt after the breakup. So like post August, how have I felt? What have I been doing? What has my healing process been? And that has helped so many people, which it's amazing because it's one of those videos that I didn't plan at all. I was on a country walk and I just thought, you know what, I've got all of these things going on in my head. I'm going to open up and just be completely honest and completely raw and vulnerable. And now I still go back onto that video and read the comments, and it's amazing to actually see that people have either gone through something incredibly similar, but also the people that are sharing ways that they healed and sharing with other people in that kind of comment section. It's like a community, like, this is what I did, and, you know, we can all get through this and it's absolutely fine. And I think people hopefully appreciated that honesty around the reality of heartbreak.
Yeah, I think the idea of kind of community when you're going through something like that is so soothing. And I know, as someone who writes about their own relationships all the time, me sharing it is part of what helps me deal with it as well. And I know, because you did two YouTube videos about it that I saw. So one was in November. Is that the one you're talking about? That was the kind of raw open one. And then the first one was when you kind of, you were doing skincare routine, you kind of alluded to it but didn't really go into detail. I think that was maybe a bit earlier, right?
Yeah, that one was a bit earlier, and I think I just felt like, okay, I need to address it, but I still wasn't ready to fully talk about it. It was just one of those where, like I say, I think the more you give away of your personal life, the more people expect. And, you know, that's absolutely nothing wrong with the people that follow me in the audience. Like, of course, it's completely natural. Like, if you're invested in a aspect of someone's life because they've shared it online, you can't then just accept when they're just like, okay, that's it, like, goodbye, not going to talk about it anymore. So I felt like, you know, I needed to address this, but I wasn't fully ready to open up. So the video of me, the emotional healing video, that was me, yeah, being completely vulnerable and hopefully, yeah, helping other women and men out there that are going through heartbreak.
Yeah, I mean, I found that video incredibly helpful. I think particularly because, like you said, you know, the majority of your platform, it's a very happy space. And I think it would be very easy for someone to look at your Instagram profile and be like, oh my God, this girl has this perfect life. And obviously that's not the case, but because it's on Instagram, it's so hard to see outside of those little squares and to actually see that someone can go through something like that. And that's why I think the kind of social media world is so interesting when you compare it to, say, the celebrity world, where it's like you have these two different types of public life. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, fans of celebrities obviously always want to know what's going on in their personal lives, but they don't necessarily feel obliged to share it because it's not necessarily a part of their work. But when it's a part of your work and you share your relationship online, it's a really interesting thing. But it's no less traumatizing to have to share when you're going through a really painful experience. But I think the way that you describe the breakup in that video and just now is really important, because you describe it as a trauma and this physical pain. And again, that's so important, I think, because it's not something that people really recognize until it happens to them. And then when it does happen to them and you feel that degree of pain, it can be really disconcerting if you weren't expecting it. It's just, from the way you've spoken about it, it sounds like the breakup kind of came out of nowhere. Do you think that made it all the more
traumatizing to deal with. I mean, breakups are always difficult, but I think when it's, you know, when you're planning a wedding and then suddenly it's over, it's, you probably go into a state of shock, I suspect.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's the worst breakup that I've ever gone through based on the shock, I think. Just like, for your life to be what you thought, so well planned out, and you know, I was 28 and about to get married, and I'd met the man of my dreams. Like, literally, I idolized him, which was, now I can see, a complete problem, because I'd romanticized and fantasized about the whole relationship to the point where I don't think I was actually seeing it for what it really was. And that was a problem, because I was in this fairy tale that I'd fabricated myself. And then when it all came crashing down, it was just like the end of the world for me. I just didn't know what to do. I felt so lost. It was like I'd found out my whole life was a lie. It really was. I had to rediscover myself. But having said that, I do feel like the shock of it and how sudden it all was and how unexpected it all was, in a way, made it easier for me to do that and move on and walk away, because I was so unbelievably like disappointed and let down that I had no other choice but to move forward. I couldn't look back. Like, there's no way I couldn't look back and long for what that was, because I'd realized that actually I'd romanticized this whole idea. Not that I'm putting the blame on me, of course, but like, I definitely had done that, and I'd put this man on a pedestal. Not his fault, I'd done that. And so I think me realizing that actually it wasn't what I thought it was forced me to just keep moving in the right direction and work on yourself. So in a way, I hear about friends that have gone through breakups where it's just been so heartbreaking for both, because they've just fallen out of love with each other, but they still care deeply for each other. And it's like, oh, but you're my security blanket and we want to stay together, but we can't. That in a way sounds like that would take longer to move on from. But with me, I think how sudden and how traumatic the whole thing was just like, oof, I've got to just go that way, away from this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because this is something I know I struggled with, I think one of the hardest things about going through a breakup is cutting off contact. But it sounds like you have had a really healthy approach to this because of the circumstances. You were able to just cut off completely. And that is definitely what friends will tell each other to do. But Christ, that is so hard to do, particularly in some situations, like you said, where you are constantly second guessing yourself. So how did you have the kind of strength to do that, if that is what you did?
Yeah, at the beginning, it was incredibly hard. The first couple of months, I wanted nothing more than to pick up my phone and speak to him, because he was my person, and he really did become like a best friend, and I trusted him with my life. So I just wanted to maintain contact after breaking up, but it was very hard to train myself to not constantly pick up my phone and see if he's messaged or my phone's ringing. Is it him? Is it him? That took a while, but I knew deep down it's never going to work if we're still speaking all the time. It just doesn't. And, you know, I've heard of a lot of people that have maintained friendships with their exes. And if that works for them, then amazing. I applaud them. I think it sounds so lovely to genuinely be friends with someone. I just personally, with any of my ex-partners, can't imagine it. I much rather kind of, we've had the great times, we've fallen in love, we've had so many, we've created so many happy memories together, and for whatever reason it's come to an end, I'm far happier leaving it there and walking away. And that, I maybe that sounds really brutal, but I just feel like I don't want that person to still have a piece of me, even if it's just a friend, to know that I'm always at the end of the phone, that they can still always contact me when they want. That really doesn't sit well with me. I would rather just be like, you know, this is over, and, you know, it's lovely what we had, but just no more. Goodbye. Thank you very much.
God, that sounds very, you're a very strong person, because I think that is fucking hard to do, because it's not about necessarily like wanting to keep in touch with them, but I think it's just, I don't know, after a certain period of time, it's so easy to romanticize the good parts of the relationship and block out the bad parts, and then just be like, oh well, now I really miss them, and now I just want to call them and talk to them. And it's just like, in those moments of absolute vulnerability, What do you do? Do you call a friend? Do you talk to your family? What did you do to kind of stop yourself?
Honestly, I feel like I treated it like I was mourning a death, and that I think because it really was like this person, or the relationship wasn't what I thought it was at all. So it was like, well, that person died and I don't know who this person is. And so that is incredibly morbid, but it was like I had to mourn and I guess grieve, and it was incredibly painful because it almost felt like I was self-inflicting pain, because I actually, you know, I know he is at the end of the phone if I wanted to, but I really would not allow myself to. And I felt, and I do feel, incredibly fortunate and lucky to have an amazing support network of women in my life that were there for me and dropped everything to just be there. And this was really tricky actually during a pandemic. I mean, this all happened in the summer, so we weren't in a lockdown, so you could see friends, which was, I was really lucky that timing wise it happened then, I suppose. So I remember my closest, oldest friend like put together this care package with like vegan chocolates and magazines and like everything, and just came around, was just like there for me. And she was like, we can talk about this as much as you want, or we don't have to talk about it at all. And she, I mean, that's why she's my best friend. But my mum as well. I then went and moved back to be with my parents in Sussex, and yeah, my mum was incredible. Just, I think she, it made me realize that actually mums are right a lot of the time. They actually do know what they're talking about. And one of the things that she said to me was, you need to really establish a relationship based on friendship. She was like, it's what happened with her, and it's a piece of advice that really stuck with me. And I don't know if this will happen in the future, but she was like, you need to be friends with someone in that, I think it's all about that respect you have for someone when you're friends. And she just had all of these little like pieces of information that were just like, wow, okay. Like, and it just really helped me move on from that trauma, I suppose. And it was lovely to be able to be back at home. But then the lockdown hit, second lockdown. So I was like stuck. And then obviously after Christmas, we've had the third lockdown. So I feel like I've been in this weird limbo period where pre-lockdown or pre-COVID, my life was very, very, very different. My future was different, like everything that I planned, it was very different to how it is now. And just this past year has almost halted me in figuring out what my life is now, because even though I've done all of this work on myself and I feel like I've done so much healing, and I genuinely am so proud of myself and a bit shocked that I've been able to do it. I don't know where this strength came from. I genuinely feel proud. I'm like, wow, I'm stronger than I ever gave myself credit for. But at the same time, I have, like everyone, been in a lockdown. So I have this weird apprehension and anxiety about lockdown ending, because I'm like, that's when I need to face who I am. That's when I need to face my new life, because I will be released into the wild as like the new Naomi post-COVID, post all of these traumas and everything. That it is a little bit scary.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's like so much has changed when you're going to be going back into that. So are you still living at home now? And I guess, are you planning to move back to London when the lockdown is over?
Yes, yeah. So still living in Sussex, but I am absolutely, like, I'm so excited to go back to London. I love London. I've lived there for so many years, and I've actually always loved living on my own as well. So being able to have my own flat again, like live on my own, I genuinely am really, really excited about. And I moved into my new flat in September of last year, but I haven't been able to fully enjoy it at all. So I do have that excitement there. But I could have spent lockdown on my own, but honestly, I feel like I was exactly where I needed to be. I had my family around me, and I've got a very young little sister because she was born when I was already an adult in my 20s, I've never lived with her. So it was just like this perfect opportunity to live with her, spend time with her and my family. And they were incredible for me and with this whole journey. So I feel like I really was in the right place. And I am excited to get my London life back. I guess the problem with lockdown, I need like social interaction. I love, you know, hanging out with friends and everything. And then I almost need that time and space on my own as well. So living on my own in London is my perfect setup, because I can go out to events, meet new people, see my friends, like running all over town, left, right and center. And then I get home completely exhausted. And then I'm like, yes, my own space, time for some Zen. Whereas lockdown, I think spending 24/7 on my own, it just wouldn't have obviously been the same, but I think it would have actually been bad for me. I dread to think what kind of state I'd be in right now if I hadn't have had my mum there, really.
I've been living alone the last few weeks, and yeah, it's no picnic. it's really no picnic. It's really hard. But I'm very lucky that my mum lives very close to me. She lives just down the road, which is probably why she helped me find this flat conveniently, a 2-minute walk from her.
I'm sorry you've had to spend it on your own, but I guess, like you say, you've got your mum nearby, so hopefully you've been able to go for walks and everything. I mean, it's just such an odd, weird time that we're living in right now, and so to have massive life changes thrown into the mix, it's just so bizarre. I think we're all going to look back on this one day and just think, how on earth did we deal with that, and what was that all about? It's crazy, but we're nearly through it.
I know, thank God. I wanted to ask you about having the content about your relationship online, because obviously that is permanent stuff. You know, most people have, well, I guess, no, this isn't true. I was going to say most people have photo albums or photos up and then they put them away and they hide them. But actually, that's not true, because like I said earlier, most people do share pictures of their relationship online. It's just that not quite as many people will see them as they might see yours or see those videos, for example. So I wonder how you feel about having that content up there now, you know, and be it for other people being able to look through, I guess, your version of digital, like photo albums with someone who's no longer in your life. How do you deal with that? Or do you just try not to think about it?
I try not to think about it. I think my photos, I haven't deleted them, so those old photos will still be on my Instagram. But I think my approach with Instagram is just, okay, if I just keep posting, it's going to be so far down that I don't even need to see that or go there, and people going onto my profile won't see it. So I've just kind of walked away from it, and I haven't deleted any, because the problem is he was a massive part of my life, like any serious relationship is for anyone. So I feel like just deleting the evidence isn't really going to achieve anything. So it doesn't bother me that it's there. I don't want to see it, obviously. I don't go back scrolling through and want to look at the images, but they are there. Maybe one day, actually, when I'm feeling brave, I will scroll further down to like a year ago and delete them. Who knows? Someone actually reminded me the other day that my engagement video is still on YouTube, so I feel like that one should probably come down. But again, I haven't wanted to face it, which is odd because I feel like I've faced everything else, and it's just those tiny little reminders that I think it's because I feel like I've come so far. I don't want to go backwards. I don't want to go and look at that video. I don't want to even see it. I don't want to see the title of the video. I just can't bear the thought of it.
I think actually, to be honest with you, the thought of deleting stuff like that, like you said, like it's just re-traumatizing yourself. It's like, what's the point? It's already out there. The act of deleting it, I mean, you can't delete the past, you know, as lovely as that would be, you just can't. And I think the idea of actually going through it, it would just be even more painful. Like I've never deleted stuff on my own Instagram page when I've broken up with someone, because I feel the same. It's like, you know, I don't want to delete that stuff. It's painful enough taking bloody photos down in my house. You know, it's horrible. I remember I asked when I broke up with someone in the summer, I was at a friend's house, and I asked my housemate to take all the photos and hide them somewhere, because I couldn't face that process of doing it myself. So it's a similar kind of more extreme version of that, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think physical photos, yeah, in your home, they're one of the first things that need to come down, because you are going to be having to look at them every day. I think on social media, if you're using it, if you're active on there, that they're going to end up so far down that you just almost forget they're there. Like I don't even think of them being there. But yeah, the physical photos, like images in frames, that's one of the reasons how I knew that things were over, because I went round and all the photos were gone, and I was like, what? So I mean, talk about being organized.
I want to end on an uplifting note. I want to talk to you about healing tactics. I know you touched on this earlier with like self-care and your skincare, but I know in the video that you did, you spoke about journaling and how much that helped you process things. So talk to me about the kind of things you were writing in those notebooks. Was it like when you couldn't sleep, you would just kind of say what was on your mind? Did any of it make any sense?
Yeah, I think with journaling, a lot of people are quite put off by it because they don't know how, and that's something that I definitely experienced before I started, because I was like, oh well, I just don't know what you're meant to write, and how do I start, and do you write Dear Diary, because that just makes me cringe. But then I realized there are no rules when it comes to journaling. Like my notepads were an absolute mess. There was no system to it whatsoever. I would just write whatever is on my mind. And some days I would write pages and pages and pages and couldn't stop. And some days it would just be one profound line or a word, and it would just be like, boom, that's what's happening. So I would write about how I believed the relationship was, and then what the reality was, to kind of comparing. I used to write in a lot of detail about the breakup itself to try and like figure that out. This was at the very beginning, like early stages. And then I ended up writing more about how am I feeling today and what's going on, and gradually it would become less and less about the breakup and more about just me and more about my career and then like friends and just what's going on today, and trying to figure out how it made me feel, and just I think it was all about becoming more in tune with myself, and it really helped. And one thing that I do really recommend if anyone is going through a breakup is to write a list, and this is going to sound so unbelievably negative, and it is, but it's great. Write a list of all the things that you despise about your ex-partner and keep adding to this list. Like, I went in. And honestly, so, like, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be, like, I just really, really hated the way that he drove, or like something like that. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. Or like that spaghetti bolognese that he made me once was disgusting. But honestly, like, write this list. It's the best thing that I ever did. And I sometimes still add to it.
Oh my God, that's so good, especially when you're having doubts and when you're having like vulnerable moments. I can imagine, just look at that list and be like, oh yeah, this is why we shouldn't be together, because he cannot make spaghetti bolognese.
Exactly. It sounds very shallow and superficial.
No, it doesn't.
It can be the major things as well that actually are the significant things that are fundamentally wrong for you. Like, this person wasn't right for you, that's why it ended. So don't try and like justify like why you want to be back with them because, oh, they once did something really, really nice like 2 years ago, or, you know, whatever. You need to actually realize yourself why it's ended and why this person isn't good for you. So writing down the big things and the small things, it's so important. And honestly, hands down, that list has allowed me to move on and see it for what it really is and figure out what I want going forward as well, most importantly.
It seems like you're in a really good place at the moment, so I want to know if you still have low moments, and if you do, how you deal with those, and do you find that because you've come so far, you kind of manage to shake yourself out of them much quicker?
Yeah, I think because of the current situation and circumstance that we're all in with lockdown, it's really hard for me to figure out if my low moments are because of the breakup and what I went through, or if it's because of lockdown. And, you know, everyone has their low moments. I actually think that when I have those low down days where I'm like lacking motivation, lacking inspiration, it's grey and miserable outside, it's because of lockdown. I don't find myself wishing that all of this hadn't happened to me with the breakup. I still feel grateful actually that it has happened. And I genuinely feel happier in that aspect of my life. I feel so much happier now, 110%. And I can't remember the last time that I sat down and felt sorry for myself about it, because I genuinely feel really excited and optimistic and happy about the future. So yeah, I definitely have my low moments, but I think it's more connected to just being stuck at home, not being able to see friends, lacking motivation and inspiration with work. So I don't think it is connected to that. Also, you know, my life has changed a lot, even aside from everything that happened then in August, because in September, I moved into my new flat in London, which I absolutely adore and I cannot wait to like fully make the most of. I decided spontaneously to start a yoga teacher training course, and I graduated in December. So I'm now a qualified yoga instructor. So that all started in September as well. And I literally remember the first week of the yoga course, my friends having to move, let the delivery men into my flat, because I was like lying in Shavasana or downward facing dog and like thinking, oh my God, my friends will be letting in the delivery men right now. Oh my gosh, what am I doing here? I should be there. Like, this is crazy. And then also in the same week, I launched Smart Skin, my business. So September for me, it was a month after the maddest breakup, but also a month of new beginnings. So where I am now that we're in March, it will be May when this comes out. I feel like I'm still on this incredible journey of new beginnings, and it's so exciting. And to be a yoga instructor now, and to be the founder of a skincare brand, and to feel excited about being back in my London flat and getting my London life back, I feel like generally I'm in a really good, happy place.
It's so interesting because I think everything you're saying, like after you go through something really traumatic like that, everyone wants to think of their life in that way, and like it's a new beginning, it's a new start. But I think it can be quite hard to motivate yourself to really see that as true. But for you, because of all of these career changes, but also because of the pandemic, it's like everyone is going to be having a new start when we come out of this, you know, like in a way I can imagine that's incredibly like calming, because you know that everyone else has been through shit and we're all re-entering a world that is completely different to how it was before.
That's so true. I feel like the conversations that I'm having with my friends now, it's not about a breakup that I went through in August or breakups that they've been through in the last few months. We're talking about these current circumstances that we're all going through together. And I think that's incredibly helpful, because it's this one thing that we really are all in like a similar place to that, even though obviously the pandemic and lockdown has affected everyone in very different ways, it's still something that we're all having to deal with. So I think the fact that within my friendship group, the narrative isn't about exes and breakups and, you know, how awful was this a few months ago? It's actually about like the here and now and new beginnings. And we're just, there's like this simmering excitement of what life is going to be like.
It's time for our Lessons in Love segment. Normally I just let people share their lesson, but I think with you, Naomi, it's obvious what I want to ask you is like, what has this whole experience that you've been through taught you looking back? I mean, you've touched on a few things about the kind of relationship you'll look for next, but I wonder if there's anything else that has kind of stood out.
I think it's taught me so much about myself and who I am. And I honestly feel like I've gone through an amazing journey that I wouldn't have taken back for the world. And as painful as that breakup was and the heartbreak, pure agony, I wouldn't take any of it back, because it forced me to really look inwards. And I think one thing with love in particular that I have learnt is that infatuation is, in my experience, not an everlasting love. It's not what it seems. And I can't speak for everyone, because I think if you can have like that intense love and it be everlasting, I mean, amazing. But for me, I think I've realized that I've mistaken previously love and infatuation. I've confused the two, and it's proven to me that actually that is incredibly toxic, and I'd much rather a simpler, easier love. And I think what this has all taught me a lot, I went through this whole kind of rabbit hole of doing research into the psychology of relationships and love, and then I got into astrology and horoscopes and Saturn returns. I've done it all. I've been like smudging around my flats, like you name it, I've done it and I've tried it. So when it comes to healing, I didn't figure out one thing that works. I was just like, I'll do it all. during this one particular rabbit hole that I went down of my research on the psychology of love, I stumbled upon the three types of love that we have. And the first is like the young puppy love. The second is the hard love that tends to be just completely intoxicating. It is toxic. It's extreme passion, but unbelievable highs, unbelievable lows. Often a lot of cheating and lies involved and manipulation in the second love. And then the third love is the easy love. It's the commitment, and it comes when you least expect it, and it just feels right. And I absolutely know the types of love that I've had so far. And you can have as many, by the way, these are just categories. So it doesn't mean that you have one love, two loves. You can have as many in each category. And I think when I read that piece of work, I felt this excitement for the future to find that third love, because I genuinely do feel like it's out there and it does exist.
Yeah, it's so, I totally get what you mean, especially with the second type of love and the kind of danger of infatuation, because it's like, it's so easy. That's the kind of love that you see a lot in films. You never see the easy love in films or in TV shows or really in books. The kind of love that we're conditioned to go for is that second kind of love. And I think it's why when you do have that initial infatuation stages with someone, it's really difficult to see it for what it is and see it as a red flag. And actually, you know, when you, I'm sure you've come across this in your extensive research, but when you look at abusive relationships, one common tactic is this thing called love bombing, where it's like at the beginning of the relationship, the abusive partner will absolutely shower the other person with affection and, you know, buying them gifts, taking them on amazing holidays. And obviously it's not just about money, but just like absolutely telling them they are the best thing that's ever happened to them. And who wouldn't get swept up in that, you know? But it's really dangerous.
Yeah. It's like, well, thank you, Hollywood, and thank you, Disney, because that's why we have these high expectations of what love should feel like. And then when you do find that, like, infatuation where you've just never felt anything like it, and the passion and the love bombing, like, all of this, it's addictive. It's like a drug. And then quite often I've heard with, like, this third type of love where it's easy and it comes when you least expect it, and it's not usually the type of person that you would see yourself with. Sometimes the issue with that is that you're bored of it and it doesn't provide the excitement that the second love brings you, because you crave that, like, oh, the toxicity almost. And that's the danger of that. But I think I'm just so done with toxic men. That give me boring any day.
That's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you're a new listener to this show, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or anywhere else. You can comment and leave us a rating too, so that more people can find us. Keep up to date with everything to do with the show on Instagram. Just search Millennial Love. See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.